I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All righty, hour number two. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney coming from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Let's talk some hoops. Hoop that is. Let's talk some Philadelphia 76ers. I think we need to talk some Sixers here. You know, the Sixers need to get a little more respect than they're getting. The Sixers are just not resonating. They're not on the tip of people's tongues the way they should be.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way they're constructed and the path they've been on the last couple of years, and you measure the progress they've made this year with the new coach, and, you know, whether it's Embiid, and you just heard that in the open, Embiid is my runaway favorite, and I think most people would agree. Not everybody, but most. Yeah. Runaway favorite for the MVP. You've got Ben Simmons, an all-star. You've got Tobias Harris having a career year. You've got Seth Curry, a modern, younger J.J. Redick. Mm-hmm. You drafted Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky. He's a factor. They don't want to give him up in a trade, reportedly. They've got incredible weapons. There's very few fluctuations in their performance. Unlike previous years with them, there's a steadiness and a conviction to winning that Doc has brought. Why aren't people respecting Philly more?
Yeah, I don't, because they're not as sexy as the other team that's rising in the East just behind them, and it's only by, I think, a half a game at this point. I think they're tied in the win column right now with the Brooklyn Nets, who have three superstars, even though Kevin Durant hasn't been playing. But you look at the Nets, who are on a ridiculous win streak right now. I think it's seven games in a row that they've won, and James Harden is playing at an MVP level. Kyrie and KD are both all-star starters. Again, that's the fan side of it, because I don't think that KD has played enough to actually be a starter in the all-star game. Who knows if he even is going to play in the all-star game. But the Nets are sexier, and so we're focused more on Brooklyn than we are on Philly, who has just been steady from the very beginning. And I was reading something the other day, BT, that Tobias Harris was taking some of these slights personal, because when you talk about like championship viable teams, you're always talking, tell me the superstars. Give me the big two or big three. And people always leave out Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. And I think he's using that as motivation because he plays the game with an aggression that we saw 2 years ago. We didn't see it a lot last year for whatever reason after he got that big contract. Mm-hmm. But it's back, and he's part of the reason that Philadelphia is a team to be reckoned with. And especially if they decide to make some moves at the deadline, and some of these are really interesting, compelling, one in particular. Mm-hmm. I think they're the team to beat in the East, even, you know, despite how well the Brooklyn Nets are playing.
I want to get to some of those possible trades in a second, but I want to get back to something you said before, because I think you make a good point about the sexiness of the Nets obscuring some of Philly's shine. All right, well, there's something to be said for that, but when we talk about the Western Conference, even though there's, you know, assuming AD's healthy, there's a clear line of delineation between those who are really championship viable and those who are not, we still seem to run through the, we're like, all right, you got the Lakers, you got the Clippers, oh, don't forget about the Nuggets, you got Jamal Murray and Joker, you know, you got Porter when he's right. So you got Dallas. Here's Dallas on the surge. Doncic is going bonkers. He stuck the dagger last night. Like, oh, the Spurs, you know, Pop, here they are. Like, we don't even mention Philly.
I know. And they've been sitting at the top for the whole season.
And they were doing it before they got James Harden.
Yes.
So which kind of weakens your point about the sexiness.
Yeah. Meaning we were ignoring Philadelphia before.
Even before they got – yes, that's what I'm saying. Even before they – like, it's one thing – all right, if they were playing poorly and then all of a sudden you get hard and it's like, all right, forget about Philly, and we just haven't come around to talking about them. But Philly was playing well from the opening tip of the season, and it was Irving and KD, which obviously is going to generate a ton of attention. KD coming back from the injury, Kyrie – for all the Kyrie reasons, his incredible talents, but also being AWOL for a little bit. There was a lot of attention on the Nets. I get that. Steve Nash, rookie coach. But it's too incongruent for me. I'm not saying that I would pick Philly to win. Although, you know, if you look at – you go deeper down their roster, and then we'll get to the trades. But you look at deeper down the – like Dwight Howard has brought something there.
Yeah, you almost forget that he's on the team.
Unless
you're watching them. You're right.
Yeah, and when you see him – he's still jacked. Like, he's getting older, and he's had back surgery, but he doesn't look like an aging athlete.
Mm-mm.
He's not playing 30 minutes a game, to your point, but when he's in there, he embraces his role well.
Right. He looks better than Boogie does, to be honest with you.
Oh, he looks a lot. It's not even close.
And we saw this, how valuable Dwight Howard was to the Lakers last year. Now, there were some games where he played 3 minutes, right? But there was others when he had to go lock someone down that he'd go in and play his role.
Yes.
And he won a championship because of it, right? So guys like that who are former stars but get their importance as a bench guy are invaluable to teams. And, you know, Dwight Howard is one of those guys at Philly. I mean, without him, they feel different because they don't have that veteran presence and that deep postseason presence that they now have.
Yeah, he's basically turned himself into an irritant.
Yeah.
That's his career. Like, that's his role, and he plays it well. Who is going to stop Joel Embiid if the Sixers play the Nets in a 7-game series? And it looks like they will.
Nobody.
I mean, DeAndre Jordan's going to get most of the run there.
No, but he's going to foul out in, you know, two quarters.
That's why they got to make a move for Drummond. Not that he's a defensive player, but 7-2.
Yeah, you're right. You need, at this point, you almost need fouls, right? When you start the game plan how to beat Joel Embiid and the 76ers in a 7-game series. One thing to beat him in a one-off, but in a 7-game series, you got to start, how can we beat this guy up? Like, how can we, what we were just talking about, how can we Dwight Howard him, right? How can we irritate him and frustrate him and make him work for every single shot so that he becomes a little bit less efficient? Because he's ridiculously efficient right now, BT, and from a PER standpoint, he's at 30.
I think he had a rough one last night.
That's right.
He didn't shoot well,
but
he's
still
almost 30.
It's crazy.
So is Joker, by the way. Joker's over 30.
Yeah, that's right. But but I mean, Joel Embiid is a monster, and he's playing like it. And for the first time, really, maybe in his whole career, I'm not fearful of an injury. It feels like every year there's like, something's going to happen. Here comes this knee injury, or here comes this foot, or here comes this shoulder, or whatever the heck it was. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, it feels like watching him this year, he feels more spry.
Well, he's a little thinner for sure. He dropped some pounds. I hope you're right. I want to see him complete a season and be there when it's, when it's money time. All right. So listen, there's some teams out there that are operating under the pipe dream. Well, maybe we could trade for Bradley Beal. Maybe we could pry away Zach LaVine, who I love. I love Zach LaVine. Most of those teams, that's fantasy land because they don't have the chops to pull it off. Daryl Morey does.
Yeah.
And because Daryl Morey was obviously all in on James Harden before Furtado basically said, I'm not trading him to you, without saying that, and he intimated that, or was intimated, you know that he's going big game hunting.
Yep.
And if Simmons was available in a trade for James Harden, he's probably going to be available in another deal, whether it's Beal or something. I don't know. I know the Wizards are playing better. I know they got squashed last night, but before that, they had won 5 straight, whatever it was.
Yep.
What is the best move for Philly?
Yeah.
If you're running Philly, what are you doing?
So here's one that popped up, and it just made sense. And it's not necessarily the blockbuster that you're talking about where you move out Ben Simmons.
Because I don't know if they need a blockbuster, by the way.
I think you're right. So this report I was reading this morning was talking about how Daryl Morey always is he always is looking for some type of deal. And the one that seems to be percolating, and a lot of this is going to depend on where this team falls, because right now they're sitting at 500. Mm. I'm talking about the Toronto Raptors and Kyle Lowry. Mm. Kyle Lowry, if he came to this team and took some pressure off of Ben Simmons having to always be the ball handler and always be the guy who's facilitating, it makes the 76ers even more interesting. Kyle Lowry's not a superstar perimeter shooter, nope. But we saw in that championship run of Toronto 2 years ago, when he gets hot and he's feeling it, he's a pain to deal with, and he's got that attitude that I think this team needs a little bit in its backcourt as well. So he's more vocal probably than anyone on that team right now, because Joel Embiid is not really vocal. Ben Simmons is very quiet. Tobias Harris he just does his job and he does it really well. If they had Kyle Lowry, championship pedigree, joining that team, I know he's older, but if they pull that off and don't have to get rid of any other major assets, players, they become the real contender out of the East of a sudden.
For somebody like Kyle, how old is Kyle? 34?
34, I think. He might be close to 35, to be honest with
somebody
you.
Somebody like Kyle Lowry, and they recently extended him, you're not going to have to give up a ton. It's more about Toronto freeing themselves of whatever. I don't have his contract in front of me, but I know he got big money for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not married to him for four more years. I think it may be two, whatever. I'll look it up in a second. But Lowry
is about to be 35, BT.
He's going to be 35.
March 25th, he's 35.
All right. Kyle Lowry I love Kyle Lowry. And Kyle, by the way, Kyle Lowry knows the city of Philly because he went to Villanova.
That's right.
I mean, that's where he got his rep as a great college player. Bounced around a little bit early. By the way, Kyle Lowry was with Houston early. Was Daryl Morey there at that point?
That's a good question. That was 2008, 2009. Daryl Morey was there.
He was.
Absolutely.
He drafted Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, he did. No, he didn't. No, because Kyle was drafted to Memphis.
Memphis, then Houston.
Yep.
Okay, I had that twisted. Okay. So he bounced around early. Kyle Lowry is a guy you have to love because he's so gritty, and he would bring them, he would bring them exactly what they need. No drama, big game, big shot chops, and tenacity. He would fit like a glove. My only question is he's going to play off ball? Because if you have Ben Simmons playing off the ball, Ben Simmons isn't shooting. Now you can run him through the post.
Yeah.
But if Kyle Lowry is going to dominate the ball, be the point guard,
yeah,
then where's Ben Simmons going?
Yeah, it's good. That's a good
question. Where's he going to play on the court?
That's a good question. And, the beauty of Ben Simmons is that, and we saw this a couple of times 2 years ago before he had all the injury issues last year, like sometimes he would be their small ball center, right? He would play in the post. And he was such
talking about Simmons.
Ben Simmons, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's such a mismatch. Mm-hmm. If any big you try to put on him, I mean, he's as big as them. He's 6'10", and he's got ball-handling ability, but he's also got a ton of post moves as well, right? And so he's not going to be a threat as an off-ball stretch guy at all, because he's not shooting out there. But the mismatches in the paint are something that you can think of for sure from a game planning standpoint if he doesn't have to be the primary ball handler.
But that doesn't mesh with what Embiid wants to do, even though Embiid steps out and hits shots, as we know. Remember, Embiid said, I want the ball to run through me.
Yeah, true.
And if Simmons is in his way.
You can mix and match it. You know what I mean?
You can. I'm not saying you can't. But
here's the thing. Kyle Lowry probably isn't the starter. If he joins the 76ers, he's probably not starting, right? It's Ben Simmons. It's as it exists right now. Simmons, Embiid, Tobias Harris, and then at some point you mix up the rotations. You can vary it in so many ways. And then when you need to give Ben Simmons a blow, you send him down, you let Kyle Lowry be that guy who can do what he does and dominates. His role is going to change significantly, Kyle Lowry's on the 76ers than it is on the Raptors.
For sure.
But at 35 years old and a chance to win another championship, aren't you accepting that?
He would be, I can't speak for him, I believe he would be fully amenable to them.
No doubt.
That kind of move. He's a winner. He wants to play in big games.
Yep.
There's no doubt. On the sneak, Kyle Lowry's carving out a borderline Basketball Hall of Fame career. I mean, I know that sounds like a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
Talk about the Hall of Fame. But remember, it's all-encompassing. It's also college.
Yeah.
And, what he did at Nova, he is a champion, couple of all-stars. You throw another championship.
Six all-stars.
Yeah. I'm sure six all-stars, yeah. He's a fantastic player. He's got spirit and will that, like, every team wishes they had somebody like Kyle Lowry. I love the guy.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense, too, where if you get somebody like Lowry, based on what I said before on his age and the contract, it's more relief. I'm not saying the Raptors are going to hand them away, but, you know, maybe you take, maybe you trade Tyrese Maxey for that, and you wouldn't have done it in some other spots, but maybe you do it here, maybe. And if I'm the Raptors, I'll definitely take him, take a pick, but I don't want to have to give a bet. The point is, if the Sixers are going to make a move, it's almost counterproductive to give up Ben Simmons. I don't mean for Lowry to get, but to bring another star in and have to get rid of Simmons, I'm not so sure if that's the move.
Yeah, I don't know. It is either, because it takes your window and, like, it makes it, like, immediate, right? And so you better win this year. But interestingly,
depending upon the star you bring in.
Yeah, true.
Beal's only 28. LaVine's 25. It depends.
Good point. But if you're able to hold on to Simmons and Embiid and Tobias Harris, and then you bring Kyle Lowry, and it's a short-term deal, it's almost perfect for Philly, because isn't there an urgency in Philadelphia? Like, there has to be an urgency in Philadelphia. They've gotten to the postseason consistently, but there's always a shortcoming. And like, bringing in a move, or making a move like bringing Kyle Lowry and Daryl Morey, as we just mentioned, he knows him well. He brought him to Houston, back in 2008, 2009 season. So he knows the value of Kyle Lowry. Bringing him in, it addresses that Philly's got to win something sooner rather than later. And why did you bring Daryl Morey here in the first place? It wasn't to just say, build something for 3 or 4 years from now.
Nope.
It was to win right now.
Add to what we have and then create a window of sustainability for a couple of years.
That's right.
You know, and listen, I mean, the thing about Philly is, you just asked me before, is there urgency? Well, I think we got that answer when Brent Brown was sent packing.
Yep.
I mean, that tells you they got rid of him.
Great point.
That's all we need to know. They felt that where they were finishing was not commensurate with where they projected to be or their talent base. So we got the answer. Hell yeah, there's pressure.
Yeah.
There's pressure. Definitely. So we'll see. Kyle Lowry's a good name. I like that, T. Good job. All right, coming up, Alex Smith. Great story. Everybody loves the story of Alex Smith, right? Everybody. Except maybe the team that he actually played for. What? Washington? Wait till you hear this. Well, Alex Smith talked about, very rawly, if you will, what he thought about how Washington felt about his return. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. What's up? Next segment, this will be interesting. A lot of big names weighing in on the manipulation of service time in Major League Baseball. Garrett Cole took him to the woodshed earlier today, amongst others. So we'll hit that. This on the heels of the Mariners CEO, who basically told us what we all know. He just told it to the wrong room. And it was recorded, and now we really know. We strongly surmised, we knew it was more than surmise. We knew that they were manipulating player service time. But has it gotten out of hand, or is that just a tool that teams have? And it is what it is. Tough. We'll get to that coming up. Let's get to this. Alex Smith did a interview with GQ. So we don't have the audio, so I want to read this. And certainly as the former player, I want you to take the reins here. But I want everybody to know what he said. Alex Smith said this about how he felt when he was trying to come back with Washington. Quote, "They never thought I was coming back. When I decided to come back, I definitely threw a wrench in the team's plan. They didn't see it. They didn't want me there. Didn't want me to be a part of it. Didn't want me to be on the team, the roster. Didn't want to give me a chance. Mind you, it was a whole new regime. They came in. I'm like the leftovers, and I'm hurt, and I'm this liability. Heck no, they didn't want me there," he continued. "At that point, as you can imagine, everything I'd been through, I could have cared less about all that. Whether you like it or not, I'm giving this a go at this point. I mean, they tried to put me on the PUP for 2 weeks. Then they tried to high-arm me," he said. "I felt like I still hadn't had my fair shake at that point. I wanted to see if I could play quarterback and play football and feel like I hadn't been given the chance to find that out yet. It's like getting this close to the end of a marathon and they're telling you that you can't finish the race. It's like, believe that, I'm finishing this thing, or at least I'm going to see if I can. So I'm thankful we worked through all that stuff. But no, it wasn't like open arms coming back after 2 years." End quote. A bit lengthy, I know. I believe, and you take this, and I'll follow you, I actually think that's a little selfish on Alex Smith's part.
I think it's the reality of the nature of his injury. It's not like he had a torn ACL. It's not like he had something that was routine and predictable on how you would come back. And I think he's just stating the facts as he understands them, but he also has to realize that football is a business. And if you're going to have a guy on your team who is making a pretty good chunk of money, Alex Smith, I forget what his actual contract was, but it wasn't, you know, insignificant.
Nope.
Because he was brought there by the previous regime, as he mentioned, to be the starter. And so, you know, you have all that sitting on your contract, and you're a new team, a new regime there, and you're trying to build a new culture. You kind of just want to start fresh and not have to worry about, is Alex going to come back and be healthy? Mm-hmm. We all wanted him to be healthy and figure out how to be or work his way back to being a starting quarterback again. I remember we had this as an inbounds and out of bounds question, and I didn't think he would be a starting quarterback in the NFL again. Just that injury is brutal. Mm-hmm. So it's hard not to fault, Alex, but it's also hard not to fault, Washington for thinking that way.
Yeah. I mean, Washington had to think that way.
Yeah.
I understand the internal battle waged by Alex Smith, the mission to end his career on his terms.
Yeah.
I get it, even though I don't get it from a player's point of view, but I respect it from a distance as much as you possibly can. That documentary that chronicled his rehab was some of the most incredible stuff I've ever seen. It's just amazing, where he was with veterans who were disabled, who had limbs blown off in wars, where he was learning how to walk again,
mm-hmm.
Let alone getting under center, taking a snap and rolling out and trying to avoid a 6'5", 250-pound defensive end who runs a 4.5, 4.5 40. To do that is beyond comprehension for my mind. Different for you because you played, but for me, that is incredible. But I still think it's selfish. Mm-hmm. Spent 7 years with the 49ers, 5 years with the Chiefs. If he was drafted by Washington, I can see that sentiment more.
Yeah.
And again, I'm distinctly separating Alex's pursuit, which I completely respect, but those words, I mean, he's dissing the franchise. He is. He's basically dissing the franchise. And the franchise's objective is not to cater, and that might not be the perfect word, but or acquiesce to Alex Smith's personal demands or mm-hmm. personal...
I don't think he was demanding.
Not demand. Not that, that's the wrong word. Personal battles, personal obstacles. Their objective is to win.
Yeah.
And they have not been doing a whole lot of winning. And at that point, he was on the team for 1 year, just one season. So there was no real deep emotional connection to the community, to mm-hmm. the fan base, certainly to the team contractually. I think those words, while I understand them, are still pretty selfish from Alex Smith.
Yeah, I mean, and then he was making $16 million a year last year. His cap hit was 20, which is very manageable for a quarterback. But you're not playing. You know what I mean? You didn't play a lot of this. And in this upcoming year, it's $23 million. I mean, he's almost certainly going to be released at some point, BT, because I think they're looking, obviously for a long-term solution at quarterback.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know what that means for Alex, but let's also not forget, Alex is 37 years old, right? Alex is at that age where majorly injured quarterback like he was, they're just not playing anymore. And, maybe it's changed because of health and conditioning, all those other things that we talk about and that allow athletes to play longer. But, he won when he was playing, but at the end of the day, they still have a direction that they need to work towards, and Alex Smith probably is not going to be part of that conversation, to be honest with you.
Nor should he be.
It sucks for Alex, but that's just the business of the NFL, and you can't be upset about that.
No,
now, we didn't hear this, so we read this in GQBT, so I don't know like the tenor of his voice. I don't know if he was saying this with like anger, or was it just matter of fact. My guess, knowing Alex, and I've never met Alex, but just knowing how he.
I've met him a few times. Just he's how a pretty he, nice guy. Great guy.
But you know what I mean, how he addresses circumstances.
Yep, very calm.
He's probably calm, and matter of fact, calm. He was just retelling his understanding of what was going on.
Understood, and again, I respect it. But this is not college where you've got a walk-on who's busted his behind in practice or her behind, you know, in practice every day for 4 years. And, you know, they get the token start on senior night. And after 3 or 4 minutes, they come out so they can, you know, they can hear their name introduced and they can soak in the adulation. Their parents, their family's there. You get the framed jersey, you get the roses for mom, whatever it might be. We've all seen those ceremonies. You did that, I'm sure, at UVA. We did something like that at Marist. Everybody does that plays a sport. This is not that. This is the NFL. I mean, this is, if you can't play and you can't help me win, then I am putting myself in a position to get fired. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, exactly right.
And it was unrealistic. As much as he overcame everything, it was unrealistic to think that he would ever play again.
Yeah.
So in their minds, they had to move on.
Yeah, especially at a high level. I mean, this was, he almost lost his leg. You know what I mean? It's not like this was a minor injury or even a major injury routine. This was, he almost lost his leg.
It was skin grafts. It was infections. He almost died.
Yeah.
You know, that he almost died with that infection.
Yeah, I mean,
it was rods.
A lot of people point to the, you know, where's the loyalty in sports and aren't you rooting for your guys and all these other things. But football, just like almost any other sport, it's a business. And you got to make business decisions. And whether or not Washington really wanted or didn't want him there, like he said, because he basically, they didn't want me here. I don't know if that's true, but he probably felt that way because they were moving forward. They were moving on without him, and it's hard to blame them.
No, I agree with you. All right, let's get the update from Mac coming up. So this has long been an issue. Chris Bryant went through this. Many players have gone through this, and many players have been, you know, somewhat quiet in their disdain. It's grown a little bit the last couple of years, but now the last couple of days, it's just flat out. Everybody's popping off about this, where the service time manipulation, where you hold the young player down, an uber prospect, couple of games to avoid service time, you control them for another year, blah, blah, blah. Now you got all sorts of stars weighing in saying that this is a joke and that this needs to be overhauled. So we'll get into that. We'll tell you who said what. We'll actually play something for you. And if it does need to be overhauled, what is the best solution? Okay, we'll get to that after Axe Update right now. Here's Rich. March Madness right around the corner. This weekend, CBS has two full days of college hoops triple headers. The action begins on Saturday at noon Eastern with a battle, a little Big 12 action between Texas and Texas Tech, the Horns and the Red Raiders. Then on Sunday, you got three more games capped off with a late afternoon Big Ten showdown. Iowa taking on the Ohio State Buckeyes. That's two college hoops triple headers on Saturday and Sunday beginning at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. The road to the Final Four is on CBS. It's almost March, which means it's almost time to get nutty, you know? This is going to be a wildly unpredictable big dance. Who knows? Who knows who's going to even make it
At
this point? There's teams who haven't played the same amount of games, and how does that get fully weighed? So a lot of issues for the NCAA that they're going to have to juggle and hopefully get right, but some good action coming up this weekend on CBS. All right, so earlier this week, and boy, it exploded quickly, Kevin Mather, who is now the former club president for Seattle, made some comments, just bouncing around, thought he was kind of just shooting the breeze with no recordings. Well, somebody recorded, and then obviously he had to resign. And here's what he said, and then we'll get into the deeper issue about maybe the exploitation of players based on service time, et cetera. It's been a big story in baseball for a while. Here's Mr. Mather before he resigned.
The risk was, if our major league team had had a COVID outbreak and we had to call people up from the taxi squad, we were a little short on players because there was no chance you were going to see these young players at T-Mobile Park. We weren't going to put them on the 40-man roster. We weren't going to start the service time clock. You might have seen my big tummy out there in left field. You would not have seen our young players, our prospects, playing at T-Mobile Park.
All right. Personally, I've never had an issue with that myself. Now, I'm going to play something from Garrett Cole in a moment. But before we even get to Garrett Cole, and maybe even I'm going to reexamine whether or not I need to get off what could be an antiquated stance. I don't know. I might be prepared to do that.
Meaning you're okay with service time. You're okay with these guys, these organizations manipulating the amount of time that players, minor leaguers, get in the majors so that they can delay arbitration and the onset of free agency.
Yep.
Which, by the way, for really great prospects, Fernando Tatis is one that jumps to mind, and there's been some others.
Yeah, Cooney was bought out. He got a lot of money.
Yep, they're buying it out way early anyways. So it's almost
– DeGrom.
Yep, it's almost you know, I don't want to say it's insignificant because it is still very significant. Uh-huh. But really, for the guys that are sub superstars, that's where it becomes an issue.
Well, I mean, I could even argue that it impacts the superstars. But yes, up to this point, I have been the way you just detailed it. I have always been in alignment with the teams because it's there, it's a rule, and you know, once the players are a free agent, they're going to take you to the cleaners, mm-hmm. and they're not going to feel badly about it.
Yep.
So I've always thought it was a good checkpoint and a decent weapon. And that probably tells you that it's not the right thing, but a weapon for teams or a tactic for teams to use to kind of balance the negotiating power. However, maybe I changed my mind today. But the one thing I wanted to say about what Mather said about the last year pertaining to bringing certain players up during COVID, I got to be honest with you. I have no problem with that specifically because think about it. If I'm running a team, usually, well, you bring up prospects for two reasons. Number one, you think that they're obviously ready and mm-hmm. really, really ready to help you win, or they're just flat out ready and they're ready to start raking or dominating on the mound. But also the other reason you would bring them up is to, you know, maybe get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 10,000 extra bodies through the turnstiles. And nobody's going to games during COVID. So to me, that was actually a smart move by Seattle. You know, listen, like Fenway's always sold out. The Rig's always sold out. Yankee Stadium's always full. You know, St. Louis is always full. San Francisco pretty much always full. Mm-hmm. San Diego now could always be full. But not every ballpark is full, including Seattle. Matter of fact, there's a lot of empty seats. And they're going to be terrible this year. So I want to use the call-up as a means to make some money.
Yeah.
It's business.
Yeah, it is business.
No problem with that.
But, you know, the question is, and I don't know if I have the answer to this, is this, I don't know, it's not illegal, you know, because they can do...
Unethical?
Yeah, exactly. Is it unethical? Is it something that the MLB Players Association is now going to, you know, look at and, you know, have a significant pushback on at some point, maybe even immediately? Because... It's always been the unsaid thing. Like, we all know what's going on, because if you're rebuilding, why are you going to bring up one of these younger players, right? It doesn't make sense because they're not. It's not going to. It doesn't matter if they have a great season or whatever it may, because your team is in rebuild mode. So what's the point? So it makes sense, but should the MLB Players Association make this something that they address in a more punitive nature towards the teams if they do it repeatedly?
They might, but see, the problem is, to me, it's still a subjective thing. Like, if I own the team, or I'm the GM, whomever's in charge of, and you know, I don't know if the owner's going to wait, I'll call the kid up. It's going to be more GM, depending upon the owner, I shouldn't say for sure. But if I'm the GM and I theoretically have the power to call up whomever I want. Yeah, I confer with my manager. Hey, Skip, we're going to get some time for this kid. Is he ready? Mm-hmm. We saw him in spring training. Here's what he's doing in the minors. Are we going to play him at third, at first, or whatever? Where are we going to play him? Where are we going to hit him? The element of subjectivity is still there. So even if the players' union, and they should, and they will, aggressively try to reverse this, they can't force a team to call up a player at a certain time. It's not like if you fill up your car with gas, the needle's going to go to E. That is literally what happens if you keep it in long enough. But you can't tell me, even though you could try, and even though you're probably right, this player absolutely needs to be up. No, he'll be up when I determine he's ready to be up.
Yeah, but
that's where I just slippery slope, and I don't know if they'll win that.
Yeah, it's hard, but there's guys, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr., he was one that we remember from a couple years ago. You go back to Chris Bryant, he was in this situation as well. And I don't know, doesn't it feel like that soured Chris Bryant's relationship with the club? And it's still affected today, right? And so
it didn't affect it when he won the MVP.
True, but you know what I mean.
I think he just forgot how to hit a curveball.
Yeah,
and
maybe
his swing got a little bit long. That's what I think happened to Chris Bryant.
Yeah, maybe he needs to go back down to the minors. No, I'm just kidding, but you know what I mean. It's one of those things where I don't know. You just it sows distrust, but I'm of two minds here, because when I think about how the owners look at this and they're trying to save money, it just makes sense. Like, it's a business decision, especially if you're not ready to win. Mm-hmm. But from a player standpoint, you know that this is what they're doing. And so your job is to get so good that they can't do this, or they're disincentivized to do this for you because you actually help them win, right? It's a it's a weird slope, like a two-sided slope here. It's like a mountaintop, right? It doesn't, no matter what side you go on of it, you can easily slide down. And it gets a little bit, you know, hairy here. So it's an interesting topic. I'm surprised that just by having a team executive admit it publicly is causing this much outlash, because you already knew it, right? These guys already knew this was going on, and it's been very public for so many years.
But there's also real distrust now based on the negotiations from the pandemic.
Year. That's a good point.
Contracts, that's how many games we're going to play, when are we coming back? Like, there was real discord. So now the players are probably saying, whatever, I'm just going to air it out. I don't care what they think. And when players like Gerrit Cole start coming to the table with strong opinions, one of the best pitchers in baseball, on one of the most recognizable brands in the world, people are going to listen. Here's Gerrit Cole on this.
Those conversations are being had in a lot of clubs, unfortunately, and that's the kind of way a lot of clubs are acting. And I don't know if there's a rule that's going to be able to fix that. I'd like to just see us move past that. That's just not productive for anyone. It's not productive for the product. You're not putting the best players on the field for people to see. This guy's talking about players that are making him money. Like, the product is the people that he's talking poorly about. Like, it's just tired. It's tired, man. Like, and I think players are over it.
Yeah. Well, listen, of course they're over it. The question though is, you know, what is the solution?
Yeah.
And is it a viable one? And I don't know, but, you know, it's still a game of achievement, and it's not like there aren't literal benchmarks that, you know, once you accomplish this, you automatically get elevated to that. You know, like if you're in the
you
Army.
Think there should be?
No, of course not.
No?
No, I don't think so. But like if you're in the Army, everybody starts private first class. If you do the right thing, you start to move up the ranks. Maybe you're eventually a colonel, whatever you aspire to become, if you make that your livelihood. But you start with the same. There are obvious benchmarks of achievement that you can point to. In baseball, I can say, yeah, I know this kid's hitting 321 at A-ball, but he's only got 200 at bats, and that's a big jump to fly from double A to the bigs. He's only 20 years old. His body's not mature. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always things that I can say that could be partially true.
Yeah,
that's where it gets tough.
But isn't this the annoying thing about baseball? It's like, yeah, this is the way we've done it for years, and
it's changed. The minor league ascension was far different. I've told you many times, back in the day when I was a kid growing up, AAA was today's AA.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about service time issues. I'm talking about like holding these guys back so they can keep them in arbitration. And you know, really why this is a big deal is because the CBA is going to be fought over after the season, right? This is going to be the like front and center topic for a lot of these players. And you know, the solution isn't easy. There isn't like something easy you can say, well, if this happens, then, you know, you're not allowed to put this guy in service time. But what if he needs it? You know what I mean? What if he needs to go back down after, you know, however many, say 2 weeks or 3 weeks?
Like if he looks overmatched or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like he's crushing it, raking it, doing whatever you want to call it in the minor leagues. He gets to the majors and he's just overmatched. Now,
which happens a lot, by the way.
Exactly.
It's called
baseball.
He may be
popular. And, you know, I don't know. Do you put a milestone? Like if he hit over 300 on your when you come up or pitch to an ERA sub, you know, 3, as a you know, a prospect or a guy who's coming up for a couple of weeks, then you have to be able to stay.
No, but you know why you can't do that? And this is where and listen, I don't mean Gerrit Cole and other players who weighed in, but this is when people weigh in who aren't connected to the game, this is where I think some people can miss the boat. Like, okay, so even if you had a hard benchmark of a OPS, whatever, which would never happen, but if you did, you know, there are situations where guys can be hitting 216 and they hit into bad luck. I mean, honestly, where they still have a good on-base percentage, so they recognize what a ball and a strike is. They're not swinging. They're not expanding the zone. They've hit 5 atom balls, 5 line drives that found somebody's mitt. You know, and really a break here or a break there, instead of batting 216, you're batting 303 with some power, some doubles.
But the club still has the option, because you know that. You know that he's hitting it right at people, even though he's hitting them, you know, good exit velos and everything else. He's hitting it the wrong place at the wrong time. You keep that kid up, even if he is hitting 215.
Well, I think that most teams would. they would say, great, we're seeing good at bat. That's what you look for early on. You look for good at bats. That's what you're looking for, even from the veterans in the month of April. You know, when you go from, you know, hitting off a tee, seeing the L screen, gradually working up, playing spring training, seeing a lot of fastballs before pitchers start breaking off the secondary stuff. You just want to see pitches, right?
Yeah.
And then in April, even if a guy, and you'll hear even somebody like DJ LeMahieu, who rolls out of bed and hits 340 every year, basically, you know, he might be scuffling in a 2-for-18 slump, but he says, you know what, I'm seeing the ball real well, and I feel good. And the stats would not back that up. But you trust the veteran's understanding of where he is, and you would trust the team's understanding of looking at a young player and saying, all right, he's sitting in some bad luck, but we see what we need to see. But that's just too nebulous. Like, I think this is going to be very hard to change. I think also, to be fair, I think if I was a fan of a team in a smaller market, is where I want to make sure I'm fair, and I'm not just walking in my Yankee lane. Yankees, don't worry about this. Number one, Yankees basically have, you know, stars all over the infield making big money, more homegrown than they used to be, but it's not like they have these holes where they're going to elevate a kid from Double A. It rarely happens. So I haven't really gone through that where I'm saying, damn it, the kid's raking. He's obviously pulling him up already. But there are fans in Colorado, they're San Diego before this renaissance happened, the Mets a couple of years as well, even though it's a big market. You know, a lot of these Milwaukee back in the day, mid-market teams, Tampa, Toronto, they deal with this. And fans who, I'm talking about the real fans, are sitting there saying, listen, the team stinks. Bring up the kid. He's ready. I want to see him play, and I'll come to the game.
Yeah.
So I understand that frustration. I don't want to ignore that just because it doesn't affect my team.
Is there, what's it in your mind, should service time go away? Should it always be available?
I'm not going to marry myself to that forever.
Yeah.
But until I hear a viable exchange of ideas, what the new pathway would be, I've got to say that it's a tool that the owners use and often use to manipulate.
What if it sucks, but it is what it is. What if they're using it to punish kids? Because there was
about the contract, the kid from Seattle that they got from the Mets.
Yep.
They basically told them, if you sign this contract, we're going to pull you up now. If you don't sign it, then we're not. And that would infuriate me because that is leverage. That is unfair.
Exactly.
That's different. That if you're using that as an enticement to sign a contract, that's different.
Yeah.
Versus just getting the clock starting.
Agreed.
The other one is devious. Like, that's wrong. That is very wrong. All right, good stuff. We'll see where it takes us. Big Ben, I guess he's going to be back in Pittsburgh. I guess they want him back. Should they? How much money is he going to really shave off his contract to make it work? They got some holes. We'll talk a little Big Ben in Pittsburgh next. Tiki and Tierney, third hour coming up. CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.